The holiday season is upon us, filled with cheer, gift giving, and time spent with loved ones. But this year, threats lurk around every corner that could put you and your family at risk. As cases of COVID, flu, and RSV surge in California, we talk with Dr. Angelique Campin, an emergency medicine physician, about warning signs, how to keep yourself and your family safe, and the next stage of the triple-demic. Fentanyl pouring into our communities, tens of thousands of Americans dying from synthetic opioids in the past year. We speak with Bill Bodner, special agent in charge of the DEA's Los Angeles Division, about the fight against fentanyl and efforts to educate the public. And shopping online this holiday season? Beware of scams. We'll speak with the FBI about the biggest online threats and how to protect yourself from deals that seem too good to be true. Fox 11 News in Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and welcome to Fox 11 News in Depth. We're, of course, in the thick of the third holiday season since the pandemic began, and California is experiencing another winter surge, but it's not just COVID. California now is one of a growing number of states in the CDC's very high flu activity category. The positivity rate in LA County topping 25% for the first time in 4 years. The county's test positivity rate for RSV now around 15% after peaking in early November. So all of this as COVID infections are up 75% in the last week. Dr. Angelique Campin is with us. She's an emergency medicine physician at Providence St. Joseph in Burbank and a clinical professor of emergency medicine at UCLA. Good to see you, Angelique. Thanks for joining us. And what are you seeing in your emergency room?
Well, I'm seeing just that. And it's not surprising because we're coming right off of Thanksgiving when people are traveling. They're in dense quarters with lots of other people. So it's not unusual for viruses to spread. We are seeing huge increases in the volume of patients that we're taking care of in the emergency department. And that translates to long wait times, full hospitals, and we're especially seeing it in children's hospitals.
You know, I think one of the things that I wondered, I was in your emergency room just a couple of weeks ago because I had an issue that I needed to have checked, and there were a lot of people in the emergency room, and so there are people coming in for all kinds of things. I had a leg issue. Other people may have, you know, something else. It's not COVID, RSV, or even the influenza, but you're getting into a time of year here where you get a lot of population into that ER, right? And sometimes those people that come in with a leg injury, they may test positive. Do those numbers go into the positivity rate?
So that's exactly it. Those numbers are being counted towards the positivity rate. And it may not be the actual reason that someone is being hospitalized. But I believe we're also seeing the increased numbers of people using the emergency department because of what people have been programmed now to feel during this pandemic. They feel afraid. They feel that once they are sick, they need to rush to the emergency department. And that's not necessarily the case.
Let me ask you this with regard to the ER. When is it that we should go to the ER? I mean, my sense of it is if you think, oh my God, it's middle of the night. Where do I go? You go to the ER because maybe the urgent care down the street isn't open. So a little advice here on when we should use the ER.
So of course, with these respiratory illnesses like RSV, influenza, and COVID, when you're not able to breathe, when you're feeling air hunger, you're feeling short of breath, those are the number one reasons to come to the emergency department. But simply having a fever is not. Fever is not necessarily a bad thing. It is our body's way of killing the virus. Remember, antibiotics don't kill viruses, but raising your body temperature does. So simply having a fever is not a reason to come to the emergency department. We do recommend taking acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, and ibuprofen, which is Advil or Motrin, to reduce the fever because you just feel terrible when you have a fever. and it can dehydrate you.
LA County, as you well know, may be on the cusp of a new indoor mask mandate. County Health Director Barbara Ferrer saying last week the order could be brought back if the county reaches the CDC's high transmission and hospitalization categories.
Hospital systems being at stress, something we've experienced twice now and something we don't really want to experience again. So we'd like to make sure that we do everything we can as a county to take some simple steps to get transmission down lower.
The CDC does not have the power to mandate masks, but CDC Director Rochelle Walensky is strongly recommending masking, saying this week, this is a quote, "We also encourage you to wear a high-quality, well-fitting mask to prevent the spread of respiratory illnesses, especially for the 5% of the population already living in areas with high transmission." So, you know, here we are, we're talking about masks again. And, you know, a lot of people get an allergic reaction to the idea of wearing a mask. Talk to us about your feelings with regard to this.
I think that that is an individual decision. And you have to weigh your risk of disease. But it's not just mask wearing. It's deciding where you're going to be, not being in crowds of people. It's keeping your hands clean. Wearing a mask, especially walking outside on a sidewalk or in a car by yourself, is not going to do anything to protect yourself.
You know, when we look at this video and we see people with masks and we walk down the street and we hear people coughing and sniffling, and it is that time of year. It is that time of year where people get sick. And it usually does come after Thanksgiving when we all come together and not only do we share turkey, but we share sniffles. And so, you know, just a final thought here perhaps on, you know, what it is that people can do, should do. Should they be worried? Should they be concerned? We keep hearing the numbers are going up, or should we just kind of go with the flow here?
Well, COVID is not going to go away. I don't see that it will be in our past. It will be another nuisance that we must deal with in the wintertime, and it will be more than a nuisance for people with underlying health issues. It's not going to go away. So yeah. You need to assess your risk and take the precautions that you think you need to take.
And I can't thank you enough, Dr. Campen, for being with us. And we'll talk to you again soon. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, the fight against fentanyl, with more than 1,500 fatal overdoses reported last year in L.A. County, roughly four a day. We'll be joined by the special agent in charge of the DEA's L.A. Field Division about the work being done to stop the deadly crisis. We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is Tyler.
That's Tyler. Tyler was 19 when he died on October 21st of 2018.
This is my brother, Ty Hughes. He was 22.
He died on April the 6th of 2020 due to fentanyl poisoning. I found him practically dead in the safest place in the world, which was his bedroom.
Grieving parents and siblings remembering those they lost at the hands of the fentanyl epidemic. Part of last month's Fox 11 News In Depth special, The Faces of Fentanyl. Welcome back. I'm Hal Eisner, and the CDC reports more than 107,000 Americans died of drug poisoning last year. 107,000, that's an extraordinary number. Two-thirds of those involved fentanyl and other synthetic opioids. With more, we're joined in studio by Bill Bodner. He's a special agent in charge of the DEA here in Los Angeles. And these numbers just keep going up, up, up.
They do. The numbers keep going up. And when you put it into perspective, it's more than auto accidents. It's twice the number of people that die from gun crimes in this country. So it is an alarming number. And fentanyl, as you've heard, is a major part of it, more than 60%.
You know, when I talk to people who don't deal with this like you and I deal with it a lot, I deal with it in stories, you deal with it in your work. They go, you know, they didn't have stuff like this when I was growing up. Where'd this come from?
Yeah, and that's so true. And that's the mindset change that we have to make, especially with parents. Think of it this way. This is a drug that's 50 times more powerful than heroin. And now, thanks to the smartphone, it's available everywhere, every neighborhood, every household. And sometimes parents will have the false sense of security, and they'll say, I don't think this happens in my neighborhood. Or they'll say, we heard about the incident at Bernstein High a few months ago. oh, thank goodness my child doesn't go to Bernstein High. But we can't have that feeling. We have to understand that it is everywhere now.
And the neighborhood is very large.
The neighborhood is virtual. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah, so it's like, it doesn't happen in my neighborhood. Yes, it does.
Correct.
It does happen in your neighborhood. And it happens because teenagers, at least some of the stories that I've been hearing and you've been hearing, go to Snapchat or one of these platforms. They're looking for something to help them relax. They're looking for something to help them sleep. They order it. They get it. It's laced with some fentanyl. And the next thing you know, we've got a family without a child.
A tragedy. Yeah, and what you've just described is a big part of the problem. Self-medication. Teenagers who've heard about who've heard about legitimate prescription drugs, Xanax, Percocet, oxycodone, and they make a decision for whatever reason, and we know teenagers like to experiment with drugs, that's not new. They make a decision because of how they're feeling and what they've heard from other children and even adults, perhaps in their own household, about these drugs like Xanax that might help them feel better. They seek them out. Where do they go to seek them out? Social media, because that's where they live. Very easy to find someone selling those drugs on social media. They have it delivered. They can pay for it with an app. And the reality now, Hal, is these drugs, 100% of the time that are on the street or available through social media, are fake. They're counterfeit. They're not the real prescription drugs. It's fentanyl.
And so, yeah, and this is just something I'm thinking about. It may have no basis in fact, but we see where there are filters that parents can use to keep, say, pornography off of the kids' social media. Isn't there anything that can be done with regard to drugs and filters?
And a lot of times, I think we talk about what social media could do to prevent these type of things from happening. But let's talk about what they may be doing to encourage them to happen. The algorithms. Let's say you have a teenager that searches for a particular drug or a particular hashtag for a particular drug. Are they then being driven traffic from other posts, other social media accounts that have that same word in them? So it is possible that these social media companies are actually, once someone does a search for the drugs, actually directing other drug dealers to that person. Think of it that way. It is getting to the point where some action has to be taken, and these companies definitely need to do more. Listen, compliance costs money, no matter what industry you're in, whether it's banking or whether it's social media. Knocking this out is going to cost some money, and a lot of times these corporations, they're not really willing to make that investment.
But what is the action? What action can be taken? This thing seems to be completely out of control.
Three things. Know your customer. We've required it in banking. Money laundering in banking used to be crazy in the late 80s and early 90s. Finally, the government had to step in, and here's what they told the banks. Know your customer. Know who's opening account. Perhaps that's going to come to social media. Due diligence. You're responsible for what people are doing with their bank account. You have to monitor their activity. The same should hold true for social media things. And then finally, reporting. In banking, the bank has a proactive obligation to look for illegal behavior and report it to authorities. Maybe that's what the social media thing, what part of the solution to the social media problem is going to be. Maybe there will be a requirement where they have to police their own platforms and report to some government agency when they see wrongdoers.
We only have about a minute left, but I don't want to miss this point. You have a task force that's made up of law enforcement. I think Chief Michael Moore is on that.
Yep.
You're on that. Tell me about that.
So it's a drug-caused death task force. We started it up in 2018. It's gone through several different iterations. We've had to adapt to kind of keep adjusting to what the fentanyl problem is becoming every day. We look at drug-caused deaths. When there's a death in the community caused by a drug, we work that investigation. We try to trace those drugs back to the distributor, and we charge that drug dealer with a federal crime. It's a 20-year federal charge, so it's a significant charge, even if it's just one pill that causes a death.
It's a big deal, and it's a small amount that does big damage. And Bill Bodner, thank you very much for being with us, Special Agent in Charge of the Los Angeles DEA. Fox 11 News will continue in just a moment, but we'll be talking about something a little bit different. Buyer beware. Scammers are looking to take advantage of online shoppers this holiday season. We'll speak with the assistant director in charge of the FBI's Los Angeles office about how you can avoid becoming a victim. We'll be right back. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
In 2021, the FBI received more than 800,000 cybercrime complaints, potential losses nearing $7 billion. And it's not just emails from fake Nigerian princesses anymore. It's now scammers have more means than ever. Phishing, social media, text messages, apps, even crypto. To talk about all of this is Donald Allway. He's the assistant director in charge of the FBI Los Angeles office. Good to have you here. Quite a show here. We went from the DEA to the FBI.
Yeah, close partners. And
yeah, you are close partners. Yeah, you do a lot of work together. And here we are at the holiday season, and people are looking to take money out of our wallets.
Sure.
How's it for you guys? What are you finding? What are you looking for? What do you want to warn everybody?
So I think the underlying message is that it's holiday season, and we know that this is an opportunity for bad actors to look for victims. And especially in the Southern California area, we have a large percentage of elderly population. We've got folks that have disposable income, and those bad actors are looking to get at that.
Let's talk about what's lurking out there. I mean, there's a variety of these things. What's the biggest problem you're seeing?
So it's hard to quantify and say that one's more important than the other, because really to the victim, that is the most important thing.
Of course.
If they've lost money out of their account, no matter how it leaves, that is devastating to them and their families. But we've seen now in the holiday season, the online shopping scams are prevalent, where if a deal's too good to be true, it probably is. So folks need to be very, very careful about where they're identifying some of these emails they get, the offers they get that are requiring them to do things that are non-traditional.
One of the things that I've been getting, which is kind of new to me, are emails almost every day from different companies claiming that my product is on the way.
Yep.
I don't know the company, I didn't buy from them, I don't shop with them, but my product's on the way. I'd be able to figure that out pretty quick, right?
Well, what they're hoping that you do is that it is the season, we're ordering a lot of stuff, so that in those legitimate emails, potentially from some of the big companies, you might grab one of those emails from a bad actor, click on a link, enter some data, and all you're gonna get is the loss of your identity at that point. And anything you've given them, like bank accounts or information that they claim will be used for delivery, but it's actually being used for nefarious purposes.
You know, the FBI has been right in the center of the crosshairs of scammers, because I even a few years ago got a call from somebody claiming to be with the FBI.
That's right.
And they were gonna come and arrest me if I didn't, you know, pay some money for something, and you could hear people in the background, and it was so suspicious that they were talking about what your address was, send a car over there. These guys are scary.
That's right. They are preying on folks that normally do the right thing, to think that if somehow they've been indicated in some kind of misconduct or criminal activity, that they're now on their heels. They're now scared, and so the idea that the FBI would call you, right, one is that no law enforcement agency would operate that way.
Right.
And that, you know, asking somebody to give something like money should be an indicator that no government agency asks for money over the phone.
Yeah, what you would do is
you'd pick up the phone and you would call. If you want to legitimize a government organization trying to find you, is that generally they will do that by the mail, and that you can then pick up the phone, find a legitimate website, find a telephone number, and make contact.
It might be a certified letter.
Correct.
It might be some kind of form of communication that is legitimate. But, you know, one of the things you got to watch for, and it's amazing to me this always comes up, spelling. They don't know how to spell, and they always spell something wrong. There's always at least one word that's wrong. Tell everybody, I mean, we really are in the thick of this right now. And there are people out there reaching into people's pockets. They're scamming and they're doing everything they can to get identities, to get money. What is it you want to tell people to watch out for, be very careful of? Specifics.
Yeah, I think it's really important to know who you're operating with. If you are doing business with somebody that solicits you, make sure that you understand who's on the other end of that. And if you can't verify that, start over, right?
Go a lot of these bad actors are overseas, they're off the coast. They're not even people you could arrest very easily.
That's right, right? And we do want people to know, once they hit the send button and send money to someone, that money is generally gone, right? I mean, yeah. We still want people to report scams and losses, but this is something, education and prevention is the key to us having any kind of meaningful impact.
And if you don't think that people don't do this, they get caught, I was in a police station, and there was a woman that came in tears. This is about a couple of years ago. And she had been instructed to get gift cards from a store, thousands of dollars, and she did it. And she was now reporting the crime. She was in tears. This happens. This really does happen, right?
Happens all the time. Yeah.
And people get, they get busted.
They get
you know, victimized. And but do the people who are the bad actors get caught?
It is difficult, right, as you mentioned, especially if bad actors are operating overseas, using the internet, using telephones and apps. Not to say that they have safe haven, but it is much harder to bring someone to justice, let alone identify them when they're out of this country.
Do you have a task force that works on this?
Well, we do, in the sense of that we take fraud and all times of theft very seriously. So really the entire law enforcement community, for lack of a better term, is interested in this and functions together. But it is a problem that's so prolific that we really are focusing on both the investigation, but the education and prevention is our best key.
Do you have a hotline for people to call if they get in trouble?
When somebody is identified suspicious activity, they can send it to IC3. That's our Internet Crimes Complaint Center, IC3.gov. They can forward those if they've had suspicious activity, if they've been a victim, as well as to call the FBI, call local law enforcement, to try and do whatever we can. In some instances, we are successful, but a lot of cases, it is very difficult to get that money back, even if we catch the perpetrator.
There's two words for you. Be careful, right?
Yes, sir.
Be careful. All right. Fox 11 News in Depth continues right after this break. Don't go away. If you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell, and it's available wherever you get your podcast, or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in Depth. Thanks for joining us. We leave you with images from above Long Beach this week. The city holding its annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony, a massive 67-foot tree and 500,000 sparkling lights, bringing the Christmas spirit to the Terrace Theater Plaza. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time.